Tonight, our 10-minute speaker is John R. from El Cajon.
My name is Joe Rundle, and I'm an alcoholic. Thanks for asking me to speak, Larry. Welcome to the newcomers and first-timers, and congratulations to the cake takers. My story is not really exciting. There's not, it's pretty sad actually. I'm just a low bottom drunk, and I was born into an alcoholic family, mostly the men. I remember being a small kid. I was born in Jersey City, New Jersey, and for a while I lived there. And I saw the effects of alcohol on my family, starting with my grandfather. I remember at an early age him coming home drunk, always being at the bar, and he'd come home with a black eye and tell me he rolled out of bed and hit his eye on the nightstand. I was like, I was pretty small, but I wasn't stupid. My dad, he drank a lot, and he used to like to flatten the front end of the car a lot. And he would just push it all the way to the steering wheel every time he got in a wreck. And I remember him being gone every now and then, and he'd be gone for months at a time, and my mom would say he was on vacation. And he'd always come back like this, lifting weights in jail or something. Yeah. I was like, wow, vacation really agrees with Dad there. And, the first geographic we did, I remember my dad decided Jersey wasn't for him. In Jersey, he was a garbage man in the daytime, and he managed a country western band at night. And that just seemed a little weird even for me, and being on the East Coast. Country western music, and they practiced in our house in the living room, and we lived in an apartment building, so our neighbors loved us. They had a piano, guitars, and my Uncle Charlie would have guns with blanks. He'd shoot them off in the house. And he ended up dragging us out to California, and that's where my drinking career started. And I really did not want to be a drunk. I didn't want to be like my father. I didn't want to make my mom cry. And I saw a lot of that, and my mom didn't drink, smoke, curse, nothing. And, I really started resenting my father at an early age. And then, we didn't interact a lot, that's not why I drank. I drank because from the first time I took a drink, everything was okay. The effects produced by alcohol were like magic for me. I think I was about 14 years old. I always hung out with my friends and their families, and I lived in Gardena out in L.A., and it was predominantly Japanese and Hawaiian kind of neighborhood, and I'd always hang out with them. They're always partying. They're having a good time. And me and my friend Dennis thought we'd steal a couple tall boys from his dad, and we climbed up on the garage, had a slanted roof, and they couldn't see us on the other side. And I was a shy kid and insecure, and I was terrified of what everybody thought of me all the time. I thought I'd never measure up, and I didn't want anybody to know that I was scared. I did everything everybody else did. I rode dirt bikes. I surfed. I played baseball and all that stuff. But I just felt like crap inside. But when I drank that beer, I downed that first beer, and I just instantly felt that ease and comfort that only comes from taking a few drinks for an alcoholic of my type. And after that, it was on. Every time I drank after that, I remember the very next time I drank after that, I was trying to achieve that feeling again. And it just didn't come on the first one. I was like, oh, shit, I got to have another one. And I drank hard and fast. It didn't matter what it was. I learned right away that Seagram 7 was not my drink. Yeah, that was bad. That would make me sick every time. you know, but I drank all through school, you know, in high school, and I got into college, and you know, I'd be doing other things as well as drinking in college, and hallucinogens and psychology did not mix. It was really hard to focus in class. You know, and I got married when I was 19 to a drug dealer, and yeah, and I lived next door to this little store when I was a kid. I'd always go down there and buy candy and stuff, and the same people owned it. You know, and I was 19, and I'd go in there, and they let me buy beer, so I had beer all the time. You know, I worked for Northrop Aircraft when I was 19, and I can drink at lunch and just get hammered. The whole planning department would go out, and we'd go to the strip bar across the street and drink. You know, and we'd come back, and everybody would be hammered. I don't know how those planes even flew. You know, and you know, I stayed there a couple years, and I went to Hughes Aircraft, and my drinking really took off there. I would take these long, long lunches, and anyway, you know, eventually I ended up in San Diego, and I got divorced. I ended up in San Diego. I had a girlfriend. We had a beautiful daughter, but I chose alcohol over my relationship and my daughter, and I missed a lot of years, about 11 years of her life. You know, I was just out there. I ended up homeless and pretty desperate. And towards the end of my drinking, you know, every time I got arrested, I never got released. Each time I went to jail, I stayed longer and longer and longer. And then the last time I was living in off Old Cliffs Road, right behind AA Central. I was living in a trailer park right there, and for some reason, somebody bailed me out of jail, and there I was, and I was supposed to be going to AA meetings and on a waiting list to get into a treatment facility, and I'd call my probation officer every day, and hey, they don't have a room, they don't have a room, and it was a short-term crash I was trying to get into, and they... one day she just, you know, the guy called me from crash, goes, "Hey, I got a long-term bed." And I said, no, I don't. No, I'll just stay on the list for the short term, and we'll take it from there. And finally, my probation officer got sick of that, and she goes, "You know what, I'm going to put you on hold." She calls the guy at the intake, and he told her that there was a long-term bed, and she told me, "You're going to get your ass down there. You're going to go to intake tomorrow morning, and you are going to get in there, or you're going to jail for a long, long time." I was like, "Man, what a bitch!" You know. So I go down there, and I had to take the bus and a couple different buses, and you know, I got one of those little banana 99s for the first bus, and then when I got to crash, I walked on 7-Eleven and I had a tall beer, and I went into intake, and they told me I can't come in, and they're like, "Well, you got to be clean and sober for 72 hours. And I was like, "If I can be clean and sober for 72 hours, I would not need you." So anyway, they turned me away, and they told me, you know, 72 hours, come back. You know, I went into a 5-day detox, and then I called them up. They said, "Well, come on back down." And I was drunk again. I think I was up for a few days before I even, you know, went back. And they had me sit there for like, "Well, you just sit here for a while." And he said, "If I test you right now, are you going to be clean and sober?" And I said, "Yeah." You know? He goes, "Okay, you just sit." They had me sit there for like 4 to 6 hours. And then finally some lady came and got me and put me in a car and drove me over to a hospital. And walk in, it says, "San Diego Substation, Police Department." And I was just walking, talking to her. I was like, "No, I ain't going in there. This is a trick, man. I am not going back to jail." And she goes, she just laughed, and she goes, no, we're going upstairs. So I ended up in this treatment facility, and I was in there for a good, it was a 6 to 9 month program, they told me. And I was in the house for 10 months. I did 6 months of aftercare. And while I was in there, I was introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous. And that counselor, he's a member of my home group, and I am a proud member of La Mesa Men's. I'm supposed to announce that. It's actually in our, written somewhere in our old stuff, and that's the second oldest meeting, ongoing closed meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous in San Diego. It was started in the early 50s, I think. And I was told to get a sponsor, and I did that right away. And I started taking the steps, and I went through the steps, and my life just started changing, you know. And I stayed away from relationships for, I think, the first 2 years of my sobriety. So if you're new and you're having, you're kind of scared about this whole conscious contact with God thing, and you think this is just blah, 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 stick around, take the steps, God will contact you, and life will get better. Thanks.